ate some of these cookies I baked for after dinner tonight?
I didn't do it. Caitlin did it.
Maybe that's partially true, but how come you have chocolate on your face?
Welcome to the Before We Go podcast, featuring Dr. David Maines and his wife, noted author Karen Maines. Here's David and Karen Maines.
Now, here's a slight variation to what we're talking about. He started it.
No, I didn't. Eliana did.
Oh, we could give infinite examples, but I think most people know exactly what we're talking about.
I'm sure they do.
Yes. It's the harmful childish habit of blaming others.
It's quick finger pointing. One of our family stories, Karen, has become lore of the Maines family. It's about a trip we took about 4.5 decades. We were asked to come and minister in Alaska.
Yes.
We had never been there before. And wonderful, wonderful people.
They said February in Alaska. Yeah,
sled dog race time.
Yes.
They said this is the best time of all to come to Anchorage.
So this is Anchorage in February. So there is snow everywhere, 2 feet of it, at least in my memory. It seems like it was 2 feet everywhere. But if you're going to have that much winter in a place you're living, you learn to combat cabin fever by just getting out all the time. Those people, they snowshoed, they did cross-country skiing, they were out in the weather all the time. Otherwise, you just get locked up in your cabin or your home all that long winter.
Now, we had to make a trip from Anchorage east to Glen Allen because we were on a radio station there.
And we were visiting those stations, yeah.
So all the kids were in the car. You and I was sitting in the front across from Bill, who was our host, and we hit whiteout.
We could not see the road, but you didn't have any choice. You had to press. I mean, you can just see what was right in front of you, right in the side, but this was a mountain pass.
Now, we didn't know when we packed to go to Alaska whether we should take a lot of extra diapers or not, because Jeremy was kind of in between. He was becoming trained.
Self-sufficient.
And sometimes we would have relapses.
Yes, right.
So here we are in this whiteout going very, very slowly, and I went like that, and oh my goodness, I recognized something, and I turned around, and I said, Jeremy, did you do something in your pants again? He's just this little guy. His immediate response was, Joel did it. Now, how Joel did his poop in Jeremy's pants, but it was just very, very succinct. There's that problem. You know, point the finger, say it's the other guy. Anyway, Karen, were you aware that finger pointing, he did it, she did it, can carry over into adult life?
Oh, really?
We still do it. We catch ourselves saying, you know, he did it. Just like when I was a kid, I would say, Buddy did it.
Your
Buddy
brother.
Was the nickname for my brother, Doug. Yeah, Buddy did it. Probably this flaw is not as bad as, say, refusing to pay someone for work they have done on your behalf.
Or cheating on your taxes.
Maybe it's not as bad as embezzlement.
Or holding up a bank or kidnapping.
Yeah. But it was serious enough that Jesus referred to it in one of his parables. I have the scripture for you. This is Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 13. I think people will recognize it right away.
This is pretty powerful. It was important to Jesus because he told this story. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector, Jesus continues in his story, stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner.
God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, like that poor bozo over there.
Finger pointing right there, we got it.
Religious in any sense. Shift the blame. Take the spotlight off of yourself and shine it on the other guy. It's just part of what human beings do very easily, and it just seems to come with no one teaching you how to do it.
So you and I have had many discussions about how this has become a major error here in America, in the States.
Yeah, it's huge. Absolutely huge. Can't believe it.
No one wants to be responsible.
I want to go into another family story. One of our sons and his son, our grandson, came over and we watched Hamilton on television. We had seen Hamilton in Chicago, an incredible production. A friend gave us tickets. It was a great gift, and we went in and were deeply moved by what we saw. But now we had a chance to see the original cast on television. And many people have watched Hamilton recently.
For those who are not aware of Hamilton, it is a modern musical on the life of Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers of the United States. And a lot of people really don't know anything about him. His life was brought to focus by a best-selling biography written by Ron Chernow.
That's correct.
C-H-E-R-N-O-W. And it's an extraordinary piece of work. This musical was put together by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, he had read that book.
They had a very common background. Both of them had come from the islands.
You're talking about Hamilton and also the writer of the musical.
That Miranda, that's why he picked up on this historical character. Both had come from the Caribbean islands, from very poor backgrounds and bad family situations. And so Hamilton's life, when Miranda read the biography about him, it was so stunningly similar as far as his origins that he put it into this extraordinary stage musical. I mean, that thing is brilliant. Absolutely.
That's genius.
There's no way that you cannot understand that that's what it is. And what's particularly remarkable about it is that Lin-Manuel Miranda has used the contemporary musical idioms such as rap and hip-hop to cast the songs within that musical framework. So having seen it on the stage, I mean, some great pieces you need to see over and over again before you can really grasp the brilliance of them. So we saw it in Chicago. A friend actually gave us gift of tickets. And then we watched it on television this last week and watched the first half and the second half. What was different was that because of our grandson being present, we had the Chiron on so we could see the lyrics on the television screen.
The story is the conflict. He did it, right. Between Aaron Burr, who is a leader in every way, a man with tremendous skills, and Hamilton, and their conflict, which grows, finger-pointing, getting mad at one another, until finally, when you get to the end of the story, it's not words now. They're shooting at one another, but...
It's a duel. Burr challenges Alexander Hamilton to a duel in the play. I mean, I have to research this in Chernow's book. Burr did point his gun at Hamilton. Hamilton shot his gun up
into the air. I don't think he ever shot it, but there's a point in that play when you knew it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. They're going to destroy each other. Mm-hmm. And they do. I mean, one man is killed and the other man is never the same again.
He never recovers because Hamilton was so brilliant in such an essential, he set up our entire economic system here in the States that is still in existence
today. But you feel the tragedy.
It was tragic.
And the tears come to your eyes. It's funny because, I mean, that was years and years ago, but it's impossible not to say what an absolute tragedy.
Well, that's a classic demonstration of what we're talking about now. The blaming and the shaming, letting those...
Finger pointing.
Mm-hmm. Letting those emotions rise to such a point you can't control them, and it ends in taking someone's life.
I don't know where America is headed, but I feel tragedy. I look at where it is, and I think it's to the place where we can't even say something good about somebody else.
Who's different than ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah, who has ideas that differ, whatever. This is a very sad day. Let's get into my old habit of trying to put into a sentence what it is we're hoping to convey. And let's hope that this sentence has some of the feeling in it as well. I took a long time writing this out, and when I got done, you said it's pretty good, but I think I can improve on it. So here's the
writer of the family, so sometimes that happens.
Okay, the harmful, childish habit of habitually blaming others can be halted by developing the practice of honest and humble self-examination.
Let me read that again, just for emphasis, so our listeners can listen again to it. The harmful, childish habit of habitually blaming others can be halted by developing the practice of honest and humble self-examination. Now, why do we say that? That's the thing I think we need to go into.
Well, I think it's very important that we look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. Am I a part of the problem, or can I somehow help in terms of the solution? I still have one suggestion I'm going to make, and it's a good one, but I'm not sure people will hear me, but I'm going to try it. I'm reminded, Karen, of the old spiritual. It's not my brother or my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. And until we come into that humble attitude, we're not going to see a solution to this problem.
Yeah, well, generally I find that when I'm upset with someone, I'm upset with them because there's something lacking in myself. I can't exercise charity. I only exercise judgment. I point the finger because I'm not mature enough on the inside. And so I do need to look and say and ask myself the question, why does that bother me so much? Why is that pressing all my buttons? Why does that person get under my skin? It's not their problem that I'm reacting to them. It's my problem that I'm reacting to them, and I need to look within. Now, sometimes what happens, this is not infrequent. The thing that bothers me about that person is a characteristic that I'm having trouble with that bothers me about me. And so instead of taking responsibility for my own maturity, I don't say, okay, God help me become a better person and forgive me for being that way. I impose it upon that person who's acting
in a way
that I often act but don't like about myself. And so consequently, I don't like it about them. So this role of self-examination is extremely important, and that feeling of wanting to point fingers or blame or being judgmental is a good sign that there's something within us that we need to come to terms with. And what we want to do is extend charity. We want to say, we don't know what all is going on, and I don't know why that person is choosing to be that way or think that way. Can I find out? Can I sit and ask them and listen to them? Tell me why it is.
Yeah, I want to hear where you're coming from.
I don't want to argue.
I just want to hear where you're coming from. I want to go into another family story. I don't know where this started. I know it wasn't me, so I'm going to say, this is your fault.
Okay. Blame me.
But we don't have couches in our living room area. We have two very long church pews.
We do have one couch. And then on either side of the couch, there are two church pews that face one another, but they are beside the fireplace. So the couch faces the fireplace, and then either side are these two church pews.
So we've had these for a long time, and now I'm going into one of your ways of disciplining, say, our two young boys.
Who are always fussing at one another. There's three or four years difference between them. They were youngest.
Yeah, and so you would say what?
I'd say, I want you to go and sit on the church pews, and you are going to work this out between you. I am not your judge, because you're blaming one another, and so I'm not going to even try and separate this out. You go sit in the church pews, and don't get up out of the church pews until you've come up with a solution. Now, when they were sitting on the church pew, I could hear, if I were in the kitchen, Jeremy, who was the youngest, saying, Joel, come on, let me get up. And Joel saying, nope, not going to work it out. And he was just a pill. And so then I said, okay, you can sit here on these church pews till you're ready to work this out. But while you're sitting here, you have to say, calm my spirit, calm my spirit. Now, every parent knows that the worst part of parenting is arbitrating between kids who are having fights with one another, because they do this, they blame one another through the whole thing. So in the kitchen, I'd hear these little boys going, of course, their feet are swinging back and forth. Calm my spirit, calm my spirit, calm my spirit. Joel, you ready? No, not gonna do it. Calm my spirit. And two little boys.
Come on, we've been here a long time.
So that's the story of the church pews. Yeah.
Karen, I'm almost reticent to say what I'm going to say.
Okay, I'm listening.
Laid the background, okay. I think that churches, we could say to the people of those congregations, you need to talk to each other and understand each other, where you're coming from. And a good place to do that, because sometimes it's awkward, is here where we have church pews. There's a long pew right in the front. Somebody can sit at one end. Somebody else at the other end of pew number two. You can start talking and don't interrupt. You can learn from one another. If you start getting back into
arguing,
he did it, she did any of that, then you have to stop and calm your spirits.
You know, we're kind of laughing about this, but there are a lot of families that are not able to have significant conversations as families. So it could be something where people would take this model and just say, okay, we're going to calm our spirits, go to the nearest church, borrow the church views, and see if you can't come to a point where you want to hear.
Yeah,
basically able to hear without judgment. Let that person have their opinion without denigrating it. And I mean, we got a whole possibility here.
Talk quietly. You know, you could even have a conversation going on in the back pews between a couple.
You can't leave until you work it out. That's the point of it all. Can't leave until you worked it out.
You both sit there and say, calm my spirit, calm. You know, I think, Karen, if we could resolve it with congregation members, we could open up the churches all around the country. We're not going to preach. We're just going to let you come and talk and listen to one another.
But calm your spirit.
And you're going to learn how to say something nice about it.
There's possibilities in this. There really is possibilities.
Well, I think I'm facetious, and I think I'm not being facetious. Somewhere we need to change, or we're headed on that projectile where there's sadness and pain ahead that is even beyond what we know at this present time.
Yeah, we like to avoid that. Right.
Yeah, a song I like very much. It's God Bless America. You know who wrote that? I told you this morning.
Yeah, but I didn't know that until this morning. Yeah. Irving Berlin. I'll tell people who Irving Berlin is. Our age set will know. But
well, we think of him as a show person, probably one of the greatest of all American songwriters. Irving Berlin was born in Russia.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And he came over here as a young boy, got into show business,
immigrant. Oh, my goodness.
White Christmas.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Easter Parade. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No Business Like Show Business.
A lot of these are still played.
Anything You Could Do, I Can Do Better.
Yes.
Yeah, there are all these songs. And he wrote God Bless America not as a hymn. He wrote it as a patriotic song, if you please. And I love it. It's shorter. There was a time when people said, let's replace the national anthem with God Bless America. Mm-hmm. I would probably vote for that.
Yes.
I like it because when I sing or hear God Bless America, I think of the God I worship, but it could be a Muslim would think of the God he or she worships and so on. It isn't partisan in that sense. God Bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. I'd change one word in that line. From the mountains to the prairies to the ocean white with foam, God bless America, my own sweet home. It's very beautiful. The word I change is the lyrics are, through the night with the light from above. I would say, through this night with the light from above. Stand beside her and guide her through this night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, God bless America. My home, sweet home.
You've been listening to the Before We Go podcast. And if you would like to write to us, please send us an email at the following address, hosts@beforewego.show. That's all lowercase letters, hosts@beforewego.show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and share on whatever platform you listen. This podcast is copyright 2025 by Mainstay Ministries, Post Office Box 30, Wheaton, Illinois 60187.